Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. From Rachel Maddow to Rush Limbaugh, Bill Maher to Glenn Beck, have these radio and television talk show hosts helped broaden the great American political divide, so much so that neither side could reach the olive branch if the other one extended it? Is a civil conversation about politics even possible anymore?
You cannot have a streak of intolerance that dominates the process. And unfortunately, that's what's happened.
You gotta find a side and take it.
I've taken a side.
That's from a new documentary that starts a special 3-day run through Saturday at the Drexel. A split, a deeper divide, takes a look at what drives us to confrontation and what we need to lead us to conversation. Joining us is the film's writer and director, Kelly Nikes. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thanks so much for having us.
And also the producer, editor, and Columbus native, Jared Scott. Welcome to the show, Jared.
Thanks, Ann.
Question for our listeners before we move on. Do you avoid talking politics with your friends and family for fear of burning a bridge? Maybe you don't like to talk politics at the office because you disagree? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org and share your story. There are six questions, Kelly, that you asked people everywhere about what it is that divided us. One of the questions was simply, how are we divided? Why that?
I think that it was important to create some some context. One of the things that Jared and I discussed in making the film is that if you're going to make a film about division, at the very beginning, at the onset, I think that it's important to establish how that division is perceived in contemporary political conversation. And so we wanted to look at what the divides are that are most often cited when we look at the American electorate. So, for example, rural versus urban, or faith-based divides, or economic, socioeconomic divisions. And what was, I think, very important is we established that there are these ways of looking at the American electorate, these ways of creating these divides, but ultimately with a nation of our size and of our complexity and diversity, ultimately you can divide this country according to almost any characteristic that you like, that you choose. And so while those divisions may be helpful on a first glance level, ultimately they don't give us such a deep insight into who we are or how it is that we organize ourselves socially and politically.
I would imagine, Jared Scott, that it was sort of interesting about the variety of answers you got from different people from across the country. When you asked, how are we divided, they probably come from a very different place, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, I mean, there was answers across the board, but we also found a lot of commonalities. I think that there's, as Kelly said, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of different notions of why we're divided have entered the popular imagination, and people would echo those. And, you know, in the film, we go through and we talk about the rural-urban divide, or class, or race, morality, other ways that we're divided. But yeah, people ended up having, depending where you're at, you know, a lot of them, you know, when you were in a rural community, you would hear that. You would hear things that you would expect to hear, and you also heard things you didn't expect to hear. But it was an educational experience across the board. And I think, though, that, you saw, like I said, you think you heard those things that you expected to hear, and then you also, things that caught you off guard. And there was definitely, throughout it all, this through line of people recognizing a divide. At the same time, I think recognizing that we were, that there were these commonalities, so there was that paradox, but it was truly educational and eye opening, and that's why, you know, Kelly and I and the other producers set out to go explore and do this investigation.
That's Jared Scott. He's a documentary producer and editor, and also on the phone, Kelly Nikes, documentary writer and director. We're talking about their new film, Split: A Deeper Divide. It will be airing. Screened for 3 days at the Drexel. For more information, you can go to our link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. If you want to tell us about your divide, maybe it's in your household, maybe it's in your office, maybe it's at school, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. A lot of people, Kelly Nikes, grew up with a generational divide. I mean, the screaming over the dinner table, that sort of thing, yelling, arguing politics. I grew up during the Vietnam era. This was very normal. But it was very generational, all things being equal. And that, did you see any kind of generational commonalities?
Well, what I think is important when we look at generational divisions is the fact that, and what you touched on at the beginning when you gave the intro between, for example, Rush Limbaugh, mm-hmm. Rachel Maddow, is how generationally our media consumption has changed so dramatically. When we look at, for example, the Vietnam era, there was the commonality from the narrative that we received from the big three media. The media then had a different relationship to the electorate. We discussed this in a film. Nicholas Kristof actually refers to this and describes this in I think a thoughtful way when he says that the big three media originally were based off of the wire system, and the only way to make that economy of scale make sense was to go down the middle so that you wouldn't alienate one side or the other. The production cost just prohibited making such a narrow target market oriented message, and that really changed the way that people discussed issues of the day, because by and large you could agree on what the underlying facts were. But if I'm sure that you noticed this in Ohio as well, when you look at the, for example, the debates, the Obama-Romney debates, if you switch between Fox and MSNBC, it's as though they watched two completely different events. The interpretation and the commentary that comes now from ideologically oriented broadcasting just makes for a radically different perspective and ultimately a different belief of what it is that happened and what the underlying facts are. And so I think that generationally we're now seeing a perfect storm in many ways with a number of these factors that are combining to drive partisan wedges deeper than they may have done historically.
You mentioned we're approaching a perfect storm, and a couple times in the film, a few people would make the observation that it's going to get worse. Did you come away from that with that impression that this isn't as bad as it can get?
Well, there are a number of things that, and not to be doom-oriented or to be too grim or gloom about it. But I do think that there are a number of things that have entered the political arena that are historically unprecedented. I mean, I think that what's important to remember is that we've always been a binary system. We have, by and large, had two parties, and that does lead to a zero-sum approach to politics. I lose, you win. You win. And I think that what has changed, the reason why I make reference to that is I think that it's important not to be overly nostalgic about previous eras, and that mm-hmm. right now it's worse than it's ever been. But I do think that there are some important dramatic changes that have taken place that make this particularly bad. And I think that the one most dramatic impact is that of the January 2010 Citizens United ruling. I think that the influx, which you are obviously noticing in Ohio a much more profound way than we are, and Jared can speak to this as well. He just went back to Ohio, to Columbus, a week ago. But the amount of money that is now being raised and being spent by super PACs without any declaration of who it's from, without any limitation, I think makes for, when you look at the fact that 80% of those of that money raised is spent opposing candidates, i.e. negative advertising, I think that makes for, that really compromises the tone of discourse.
You know, for a long time, there's been this rule that you don't talk religion or politics at a party. One of the questions you asked people across the country is, can we talk about politics? And how did they respond to that? Did they know even what you were talking about?
I mean, I think that we're all very familiar with that rule of thumb. You know, you don't discuss religion and you don't discuss politics. And now, because of the role models that we have, that we really see a punishment for compromise, that consensus is seen as a weakness in many ways, that we don't have those examples of people that have a more centrist tone or that have a more moderate tone to the conversation. So people did respond to that. They said it's too difficult. We have a guy, a short order cook in Flagstaff, who says, yeah, we don't like to talk politics with a family because it's too ugly. And there's a woman in actually Madison, Ohio, who we stopped and spoke with outside of a shopping mall. And she says, yeah, we don't like to talk politics because people get angry. And so I think that we're seeing a lot that people are choosing to avoid the conversation rather than wade into something that could turn out to be too caustic and too difficult.
It's interesting, Jared Scott, who you decided to talk to, because you mentioned you talked to a short order cook in New Mexico, and Nicholas Kristof, of course, the famous award-winning journalist and author. On the other hand, and it kind of goes, runs the gamut. How did you decide who to talk to?
Well, I think that when we initially set out and decided to drive across country, we were kind of anybody who was willing to talk, we wanted to talk with. And I think that was something that Kelly championed from the start, this idea of, let's cast the net wide. We wanted to talk to people, professors, pundits, anybody, all walks of life, from the short order cook to the op-ed writer for the New York Times. And to get this wide... this wide array of answers from people of all political persuasions as well. And, of course, and I don't know if it's been noted enough, but we tried to go out there without an ideological agenda and to create a truly nonpartisan film. And the only way to do that was to go out and talk to a bunch of different people to get this sense that we weren't, if we went and just talked to academics, then you would have a different film. But the process at first was, let's just get, as you make a film, usually when you start interviewing, you kind of, anyone who's willing, you kind of get them in. And then once you've interviewed a certain amount of people, we then have the ability to kind of be more selective and to reach out and say, oh, we want to talk to, Senator Bai and arrange that, because we had already built up a number of interviews and kind of got the film to a point where it was ready for a voice such as Senator Bai to step in. So it evolved, and at first we were stopping people on the street, and then I think towards the end we got a little more selective in finding certain voices that we wanted to have present in the film.
Jared Scott, I know you're a native of Columbus, and I don't know how much growing up or being from Ohio affected your decision to make this film, because this has been a big problem or a status quo in Ohio for some years now.
Sure. I mean, one of the reasons why I met Kelly making this film, and subsequently we've started a production company since. And I think just my experiences as a citizen, as many others, throughout the elections of 2000, 2004, 2008, I've actually never voted. Well, I voted in Ohio, but I've never been present for an election there. When I was 18, I went to school in Indiana. And so in 2000, I voted absentee in Indiana as well as 2004 when I was in New York. And in 2008, I voted as a resident here in New York City. But I didn't experience it full on. And like Kelly said, when I was back in, I went back for my sister's wedding 2 weeks ago. And I was just watching, the TV was on, and we were watching some show I don't remember, and it was on ABC. And I think everything besides the station identity spots that were telling you what's coming up next that night or that week were just campaign ads. And you had Crossroads GPS, and then you had, I think, Americans for Prosperity, Planned Parenthood, an Obama ad, and a Romney ad all in one break. It was astounding to me. I don't know how... So I've never had that experience full on, although I'm from Ohio, but in certain glimpses, I've been able to see the onslaught. And of course, when I went home, everybody echoed the fact that they get 7 or 8 robocalls a day. And it just seems like it's a pretty incredible amount of information and disinformation that comes your way if you're in Ohio. And And yeah, although my experience growing up there has fueled my interest in making this film with Kelly, I haven't experienced it, I guess, fortunately, the way that a lot of Ohioans have.
We're talking about a new film. It's will be screened at the Drexel for 3 days this week. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. The name of the film is Split, A Deeper Divide. And I'm talking with the producer and editor, Jared Scott, and also the writer and director, Kelly Nikes. We want to hear from our listeners. If you have an experience of, you know, and want to talk about your experience of not being able to talk politics, or maybe of being able to talk politics and want to share your story, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, tablet computers, iPads, and the rest are moving into children's classrooms and backpacks. How is that changing teaching, learning, homework time? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 61 degrees with a mix of sun and clouds today, a high of 78. Clear skies tonight, a low of 55. Sunny and back up to a high of 80 for Thursday. Support for 89.7 comes from Marburn Academy, a forward-thinking school for ADHD and dyslexic students, hosting a community parent seminar, Understanding the Problems of ADHD Children, Tuesday, October 30th at 7 p.m. The path to college begins at Marburn Academy. More at marburnacademy.org. And support comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, offering perspective in a time of economic uncertainty to help grow and maintain wealth. More information is available online at themontgomerysolution.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
When you talk to Democrats, and all they talk about are these
conservative, heartland,
redneck, gay-hating,
gun-toting, crazy,
anti-science,
raving, radical,
right-wing, religious,
Bible-thumping, Jesus freaks,
clearly uneducated,
doing whatever they do, burning crosses and killing homosexuals.
But on the other side, they just see, you know, these
rich, wine and cheese, arrogant,
latte drinking, Hollywood,
elitist, Jane Fonda, Whoopi Goldberg,
George Soros's of the world,
freebasing cocaine,
smoking weed,
and sex with everybody they see,
and sort of plotting the corruption of their children. They really feel that way.
I can't help but smile every time I hear that. It's from a new documentary that starts a special 3-day run through Saturday at the Drexel. The name of the documentary, it's called Split, A Deeper Divide, and it takes a look at what drives us to confrontation and what we need to lead us to a conversation. Joining us is the film's writer and director, Kelly Nikes. Once again, welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you so much.
And also the producer, editor, and Columbus native, Jared Scott. Jared, once again, welcome to the show.
Thanks again, Ann.
Let's hear from some listeners now. I'm kind of interested to hear what Liz from Clintonville has to say. Hi, Liz, you're on the air.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I find most of my political discourse with friends and family takes place online, usually through Facebook. And what I like about that is that I get to word my arguments as clearly and concisely as I can, try to attack the point and not the people who follow it. And also, I find that I have a lot more people than I would initially think actually agree with me, probably by all the likes and people chiming in to support me, and also, for those that don't necessarily agree with me, we can actually have a well-thought-out conversation rather than just blasting each other back and forth.
What does social media have to do with all of this, Kelly Nikes?
I think that bringing up social media is hugely important. Obviously, we can't understate the impact that Facebook and these social media have had on our dialogue. The important thing to recognize about social media and also about online data gathering in general, Eli Pariser writes about this very thoughtfully in The Bubble Effect, Are you still there?
Yeah. Are you there?
Terrific.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what the algorithms of these search engines, and particularly of Facebook, for example, what they are designed to do is return things to us that they believe we will like, that they believe that we will click on, because this is all in an effort to have advertising revenue be maximized. And advertisers obviously want people who are in the market for the product that it is that they're selling. So these search parameters end up reinforcing ideas based on what our search history is. So if you and I put the same search field entry into Google, or how it is that we gather data on Facebook, you and I will get different answers based on what our respective search histories are. And as a result, you and I will then get ideologically different answers because we have different search histories. And I think that can't be understated for the echo chamber effect that it ends up having. So while the caller has had a positive experience, that does tend to be the exception, because people are able to find and surround themselves with the information and the things that they like and agree with to a greater degree on Facebook, not only by their own searches, but how it is that these search engines are designed to give us back information that it thinks we want to see.
Can I add something to that real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, please.
I did notice that, now that you bring that up, that I have a tendency to friend people who I don't know that are recommended to me through Facebook, probably because they have similar viewpoints that I do. But my friends that disagree with me, that tend to be more conservative, more religious, those are people that I actually know in real life. But I think that helps because I can word my argument, because I can put a real face to those people. I know those people. Hmm. And in the meantime, I have a bunch of other liberals and atheists backing me up.
Okay.
Sure.
Thanks a lot, Liz.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. 614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a new documentary. It's called Split, A Deeper Divide. Guess what it's about? About how we talk about politics in this country these days. In that last clip from the film that we listened, where they were going back and forth between, well, the stereotypes of the, I guess, the blue and the reds, you really get the point of how we have stereotyped each other. I mean, but after that, conservative commentator Tucker Carlson says that both sides are right to a certain extent about each other. What do you mean by that?
I think that we've become incredibly familiar with these stereotypes. I mean, if you say Volvo driving, latte drinking, sushi eating, you already immediately have a picture of who that person is, and I think that you can add five more characteristics to that. And these are driven home. On the one hand, there's always a kernel of truth to the cliche, but at the same time, obviously, it goes a long way towards pigeonholing us, and it doesn't come anywhere close to giving the complex portrait of who we are, because inherently we all embody these incredible contradictions.
Joanna in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Anne. I am an independent voter with a very diverse mix of friends, and I'm extremely hesitant to discuss any of my political views because I'm pretty sure to offend somebody. So I definitely relate to the idea of just, you know, keeping quiet about my politics.
Boy, the independent stuck in the middle, Jared Scott, is that very pretty unusual these days?
No, I can relate to that as well. I mean, you know, being from Ohio and going to family gatherings, it's not, you know, you're not being, you know, you don't want to walk in and all of a sudden start talking politics with everybody, because you know it's going to go to places that might be uncomfortable, and you just kind of want to enjoy people's company. I mean, no one's ever said that talking about politics is easy, but I think, as you pointed out, Anne, that the film aims to create a conversation and not confrontation. I think if we just all have we can find like a starting point for discussion,
You know, if we have, the problem is we're all kind of happily complacent, reconfirming our worldviews and like the media that we choose to consume. And sometimes we don't agree on the facts. And so it's hard to start having conversations because people kind of go into tangents, they go off on rants or tirades. And I think what the film does, to bring it back to the film, it creates this kind of this platform, this starting point for a fair and civil discourse. So we've tried our best to put this information together in a way that's digestible, understandable, and compartmentalized. And I think that, you know, I could watch that with someone who disagrees with me or agrees with me, and we can go out and we can start talking in a way that maybe we couldn't do before. So, but yeah, it is difficult. I mean, it is not easy, and I completely understand. And I've been there, and I still am. I still struggle with trying to figure out how to engage in with certain people in certain situations.
Thanks, Joanna, for that call. We appreciate it. We've sort of talked generally about it, but there are some very specific things that we talked about the media earlier on. There is the issue of gerrymandering that is creating a Congress and to another extent state legislatures that are very polarized in and of themselves. And these are supposedly our leaders. What do you make of that, Kelly Nikes?
I think that it's important to point out some of these mechanisms that end up furthering the divide. You mentioned the media, which has transitioned away from this centrist-oriented messaging to Tucker Carlson in the film actually refers to it as narrowcasting rather than broadcasting, which I think is a helpful way to frame that concept. Gerrymandering is obviously also terrifically important in this conversation and having it be part of the dialogue about how it is that we've become to be, how we've come to be as divided as we are. And the important thing to mention about gerrymandering, which we were discussing earlier that I don't think gets noted as frequently as it should, is that gerrymandering, obviously the partisan redrawing of congressional districts so that they are safe for the parties that are redrawing them. The important thing to recognize that is not only does it make it safe because then you're able to concentrate your support and minimize the support of the opposing party, the second consequence of that I think is equally, if not more important, but less frequently noted, is the fact that safer districts are more lucrative. In terms of fundraising, as we now see campaigns become mind-bogglingly expensive to fund. Now they've done scholarship on how much time elected officials and candidates have to raise money. It's 30 to 70% of their time is dialing for dollars. These safe districts are far more lucrative fundraising bases than they were before they were
because they
redrawn.
Raise the money, but they don't have to spend it.
Exactly. There are two things happen. Cass Sunstein writes about this very thoughtfully, which is when you bring a group of people together and you create a homogeneous community, you create a homogeneous group, that homogeneous group tends to coalesce not around the median opinion, but around the extremes, the sociological phenomenon that he's studied for a number of years now, that you see homogeneous groups move towards their respective polar extremes rather than coalescing around the middle, because there's no countervailing voice. There's no voice of opposition that might temper the movement. It's all basically one wave that goes in one direction. And so those homogeneous groups, not only do they tend to be more extreme, they also tend to be more lucrative. They just give more than you see in heterogeneous groups. And that is obviously primarily important, as Jacob Hacker in the film references Woodrow Wilson's assistant, his advisor, who said famously, there are three things that are important in politics: money, and I can't remember the other two. And I think that's more apparent now than it has been in generations.
What, when you asked, one of the questions that you asked Jared Scott was, what role does faith play in our politics? How did that turn out? Is it as much of a player as it appears to be, or not so much?
Well, I think what we found, what we ended up exploring was that faith played a large role in the 2004 election, or at least we were told so, you know, in the exit polls, moral values became the big topic that was that received a lot of attention. And since then, I think that Kelly and I have paid attention a lot to wedge issues, things like gay marriage and abortion. These things that they're often tied in with religious views and with religious institutions, and that those issues, and there's a lot of people that are single issue voters, and you notice sometimes with issues like that, there are oftentimes, I think, that politicians, instead of smoothing, and a lot of people speak to this in the film, the idea that politicians are supposed to smooth over those differences, but we have people that tend to further that divide and drive that stake further and really make those apparent. And in doing so, there's that divide and conquer strategy. And so faith, we notice that a lot of people are sincere in their faith and that it's incredibly eye-opening to see how faith factors into a lot of people's political decisions. But I think the unfortunate side to some faith incentivized single issue wedge issues is that you get this. I think people play to that as opposed to try to help people see a bigger picture. And I don't think that there's a larger machine there that is working against us. And so that was something that we noticed a lot when we went around and talked to people. And we went and explored a lot of areas in the Bible Belt as well. But you saw this across the country. But in one particular section of the film, we do go into it quite deeply.
Kelly Nikes, you talk to a lot of politicians, both current and some retired. They seem very frustrated across the board. There's nobody that's happy with the way things are working in Congress, at least among the people you talked with.
Yeah, I think that one can certainly make that statement. I want to touch on one point that Jared was just referencing that I think it's also important to note, if you don't mind, about faith-based politics, the faith lens of politics, is the fact that if you are endeavoring to fight a battle for a certain faith-based issue, gay marriage, for example, or abortion, that is a non-budgetary battle. You can't, after 4 years, you can't, as the voter, go to the elected official and say, you said you were going to balance the budget and you didn't balance the budget. You said you were going to increase spending on schools by 22%. You only did it by 16%. There's an incredible attractiveness, and I think that in this day and age where we see such sophistication in political strategy, I think that it is important for us as 21st century citizens to have a contemporary approach to how it is that we interpret these political strategies. I think that it's in our best interest to have a deeper understanding of how it is that the campaigns work so that we have a greater chance of interpreting some of these issues that get pushed to the fore. And I think that's an important thing to recognize about faith-based issues, that they, from a political perspective, you can always keep fighting that fight, and there never is a budgetary attachment to it. There's nothing numerical about it that you can be called on in an election. If you didn't get it, if you didn't, for example, outlaw abortion, you can always run on that. And if you did outlaw abortion, then you need to be able to, then you can run your next campaign on keeping it outlawed. They have incredible attractiveness to political campaigns for what it is that they represent in terms of off-balance sheet type of issues. And I think that that's an aspect of those that are important to recognize. They also, because of how divisive they are and the way that they get used, they are also one of the reasons that we did have people retired and those in office lamenting the state of politics, and particularly lamenting the state of discourse. Both Chuck Hagel and Evan Bayh, mm-hmm. who are in the film, both of us refer to this. The clip that you played at the beginning touches on this as well. The fact that you can't have this type of intolerance gripping the system. One of the sad things that we've seen is moderates like Olympia Snowe choosing to retire, to step away from politics because she says Congress just isn't the place where you can get things done now. The tone is so destructive and so divisive that it's not the place where you can actually solve problems. And when we see moderates like Olympia Snowe exiting the stage and being replaced by more extreme politicians that excite the base rather than reach across the aisle, I think that's a loss both for the political system but also for the electorate and the nation as a whole.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about a new documentary. It's called Split, A Deeper Divide. It'll be at Drexel this week. For more information, you can go to our link at WOSU.org/allsides. When we return, we'll continue the conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In the final debate, the president comes at Romney with horses and bayonets. The Republican candidate pulls even in some polls. The president makes the rounds on late-night TV. I'm Neil Cunningham. Ken Rudin, the political junkie, joins us as we focus on the races that will decide control of the House and Senate. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4. Stay right here in 20 minutes. At 11 o'clock, hour 2 of All Sides begins with a discussion of the economy. Thanks for joining us today. Sunshine and a high of 78. Clear skies tonight, a low of 55. Support for 89.7 comes from the Wellington School, where children are encouraged to discover and develop their unique potential in preschool through grade 12. Wellington will host a visit day for prospective middle and upper school students on Monday, October 29th at 9 a.m. More at wellington.org. And support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Kind of find like-minded people and live among them because they can.
The people that I interact with, the people I do business with on a daily basis, 95% of the people I deal with were conservative, predominantly vote Republican.
Maybe it's, again, an issue with our generation where we tend not to stay where we grew up, that it's a very mobile society now. So I think you can see a sort of a polarizing shift being reinforced by people moving out of regions they feel are hostile.
That's from a new documentary. It starts a special 3-day run this week through Saturday at the Drexel. It's called Split, A Deeper Divide. Joining us is the film's writer and director, Kelly Nikes, and also the producer, editor, and Columbus native, Jared Scott. Kelly Nikes, I was fascinated by that nuance of how mobility has changed things. You know, we talk about American, you know, mobility and how we move around a lot in a lot of other contexts, but I hadn't quite thought of it that way.
Fascinating. It's a fascinating topic that we unpack in the documentary. This idea that historically America, as you say, America's always been mobile. I mean, the idea of the road trip and the idea of picking up and reinventing yourself in a new place, I think is part and parcel of the American story. But the thing that's changed now is that there's an overlay of ideological meshing that we haven't had in the past. When you see, for example, the migration from Appalachia out west, that was exclusively for economic opportunity. There was a chance to have a better life somewhere else, so people picked up and moved. But what's happened now, and you see this really clearly, ironically enough, in D.C., what's happened now is when people move, they go and they find the neighborhood that is matching and is in line with their worldview. So when you see, for example, people move to D.C., those who are conservative, by and large, tend to move to the suburbs in Virginia, and those who are progressive or liberal tend to move, by and large, to the suburbs in Maryland. We tend to surround ourselves with people that we agree with, And while that may be more comfortable, it does tend to further the echo chamber effect of only hearing and being exposed to those ideas that we like and that we're familiar with, and not challenging the preconceived notions that we have. And I think that that challenging, of which we see less and less these days, is important because it's that exercise. It's exercising flexibility. It's making sure that we stay pliable and open to new ideas rather than becoming more calcified and more set in our ways. And I think that that's really an important outcome of that nuance that you're referring to.
Joe in Canal Winchester, you're on the air. Thanks so much for waiting.
I am. I have found out a solution to being able to talk face-to-face about anything. We call it a Socrates meeting. And I like to see people from all walks of life there, but in a face-to-face, civil manner over a cup of coffee, we talk about anything and everything. And it's good. It's just good to have a way you can banter back and forth on anything. And we don't stick with one subject all the time. It's not constantly politics. But I feel there's an extreme need for the average Joe to be able to not communicate through electronics means or writing or sending letters, but face-to-face. And I have a question.
Actually, do you mind if I ask you a question first?
Oh, okay.
Is this something that you are doing independently? Is that through an organization? Because I think it is a phenomenally refreshing thing to hear of. And I'm just curious if this is done through some type of advocacy group or through an organization, or if this is something you've done independently.
No, this is more or less done independently. And years ago, I think there's unofficial Socrates groups that meet around the country, but this is our little homegrown 2-hour meeting on Thursday morning.
What kind of people are there, Joe?
There are mainly, I'm going to say mainly conservatives, and I'm not. I'm very liberal with my thoughts and views, but it gives, there's retired telephone workers, there's retired managers, there's NASCAR people, there's farmers, there's devoutly religious people, and I think it does a lot of good because I've tried many ways to talk about different subjects, abortion, capital punishment, politics, and for myself, it can be a very challenging conversation. By that, I mean I was a Marine, and I'm used to standing up when I should sit down and shut up. But it's just a controlled manner, and it needs to be face-to-face so you can read language, you can read facial expression.
Which, you know, hang on, Joe, I did want to bring something up. Jared Scott, at the very beginning of the film, there's no sound. Now, I don't know if it was because of Vimeo or not, whether I was watching it online, but you only see people's facial expressions and see them, you know, waving their hands in the air and pointing at people. Was that on purpose?
Yeah, after Senator Bai and Senator Hagel open up the film, this is cold open where they kind of lay out what it is that we're going to see. And then we go into a section where there's this soundscape, there's this drone, and there's this kind of building tension. And you only see people kind of this harsh gesticulation and this pointing. And it's just I think it allows the viewer to kind of settle into the film and start thinking like, oh yeah, like people are, because people are incredibly divided, and people are getting each other's faces. And Kelly and I have seen this, and this doesn't always happen on a day-to-day level. But there are those moments where, you know, at the wrong place at the wrong time, or the right place at the wrong time, or however you want to phrase it, these people come together, and at some point,
it devolves into a shouting match or into pointing. And we wanted to set that up in a way so the viewer could experience that and I think project their own experiences onto that before the different newscasters come in and start laying out with sound bites why we're, you know, how divided we are.
Can I ask my question, then I'll
sure.
drop off? Have you, this is for your guest,
mm-hmm.
have you found out or have you seen, I worked for 42 years for a major corporation. Part of it is a union member, part of it is a manager. Over the years, I have seen that you cannot be a liberal in a management position. You almost have to be in the closet because corporate America does not want, in my experience, they do not want liberal people in management positions over a organized labor shop.
Did you find that in your work, Kelly Danks?
The specifically having a chilling effect, as it were, of liberal thought in certain levels of the corporate hierarchy wasn't something that we focused on specifically. But having that impact on how it is that people express their ideas and their thoughts within communities that they feel are hostile to those was certainly something that we explored in depth in the film. And from both sides, people have talked about whether they're in faith-based communities and feel uncomfortable expressing their liberal perspectives in those, or whether you have people in academia, for example, who feel uncomfortable expressing conservative viewpoints in those communities. That discouragement towards people expressing views that are contrary to the belief system of the majority of that community, that is certainly something that we're seeing across the country and across these different social groups.
We have an email from Tom. He writes, interestingly and perhaps ironically, I think the folks who are actually trying to bring constructive conversations other than public broadcasting to the table are the satirists. Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, even Letterman, etc., regularly bring parties from both sides of the aisle to discuss issues in a substantive yet lighthearted manner. These people are the Mark Twains, Jonathan Swifts, and Will Rogers of our era. The partisan pundits like Rush Limbaugh or his ilk on the other side have no financial interest in building bridges. Their demographic base would fall off and their programs would fail. I think that's interesting how he characterizes them as the Mark Twains, the Jonathan Swifts, and the Will Rogers of our era.
I think that it's reflective to a certain degree of how divisive and how difficult it has become. Norm Ornstein, who we were delighted to have in the film, writes about this in It's Worse Than It Looks, which touches on the question that you asked earlier. Is it dire? Is it bad? And I think that when we are almost exclusively able to approach this through the veil of satire and comedy, I think then we need to take stock and see, is this really what it's come to, that having that type of across-the-aisle discourse is happening on Comedy Central rather than on MSNBC or Fox News. I think that email points out very specifically that so much of this is driven by market share and driven by financial factors that have absolutely nothing to do with civic health. And we really strove to explore that as thoughtfully as we could in the film and getting that type of foundational understanding of how it is that these different factors operate, namely that financial motive for media, for example, in this day of a 24/7 news cycle where there is so much competition, and the only way to rise above that competition is be even more shrill in tone than what you're seeing on another channel. I think that ultimately, while it may serve the bottom line of a corporation that has broadcasting outlets, that obviously doesn't serve the electorate.
Mary from Ostrander, you're on the air. We're almost out of time. I wanted to squeeze you in.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm from the South, a transplant, and recently I've had conversations with my family, and most of them are Republican, and it got pretty nasty for me because I was told that I was unchristian and they were afraid for my soul, and so consequently I've not mentioned any politics at all to them anymore, and I mean, you know, it's difficult to go down there now because of that atmosphere. So and I love them very much. I, you know, we don't even talk on Facebook about that anymore.
Oh, Mary, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. A lot of broken families out there. Jared Scott.
Yeah,
you go ahead, Kelly.
No, I'd love to have you to express your thought as well. I just want to say that this is not uncommon, and it's heartbreaking that people are not able to discuss that which is what ties us together. Obviously, the thing that we can all agree on is that we want the best for our families, that we want the best for this country as a whole. But it's gotten to a place where, yeah, even in families, as we're seeing, and this was a sad commonality that we saw across the country, where people are really not able to discuss this for fear of it becoming as hurtful as Mary was just describing.
And Jared Scott,
when
you come back to Ohio, how about you?
I mean, people have fundamental differences, and as our caller just mentioned, I mean, it is, and I lament too that it can be so frustrating and heartbreaking and difficult. But I think civil discourse is a skill. The way we interact, the way we engage socially,
mm-hmm.
is a skill. Listening is an art. Critical thinking, and if we don't do this, it just only gets harder. And we have to challenge ourselves, and although I know sometimes family can be the hardest group of people to engage with sometimes if you disagree, because you love these people and
mm-hmm.
and you can have wildly different worldviews, but at some point we have to figure out a way collectively to engage and to be civil and to be thoughtful, and that's what the film tries to promote, and so I encourage people to go out and see it.
Jared Scott, thanks so much for joining us. Also, Kelly Nikes, thanks to you. Filmmakers, we've been talking about their new documentary, Split, A Deeper Divide. It's at the Drexel this week. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Tom Wolfe. His new novel, Back to Blood, is set in Miami. Also, part two of my recent interview with Stephen Colbert. Since he loves music and loves to sing, for this part, we asked him to bring a few tracks of music that mean a lot to him and tell us why. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. Streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station. A service of WOSU Public Media. Sunny skies today, along with a few clouds, a high of 78 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 55. Expect sunshine and back up to a high of 80 on Thursday, and then a chance of rain looking ahead to Friday, and cooler actually, a high of 69 degrees. Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, providing a disciplined approach to help individuals and small businesses grow and maintain their wealth. More information is available online at themontgomerysolution.com. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues in just a moment. Thanks for joining us today. It's 11 o'clock.
The economy. That's where the rubber meets the road in campaign 2012. It has been the fodder of every piece of campaign literature, every candidate stump speech, every debate.
Today, 4 years after the worst economic crisis of our lifetimes, we're moving forward again.
That's the president, but according to the politicians and pundits, that depends on who you ask. What does it all mean to the voter and his or her personal economy? Coming up, we'll help you decide. That's after the news on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.